Hi, everybody. If you are listening to this, then you are interested in learning more about the sacred reading practice of Lectio Divina. So another way to say that is you're a nerd.
You're a spiritual nerd, and that is awesome, because now we are part of the same club.
Casper's president.
Well, I'm social chair, but Vanessa calls me president to make me feel like I'm involved.
So, Casper, Lectio Divina, as I say it.
Or Lectio Divina, as I've started saying it inexplicably halfway through our podcast project.
So it is one of the first sacred reading practices that I learned about.
I didn't know that.
And I thought I could tell you and everybody a little bit about the history as I learned about it. So Lectio Divina actually dates back to the 3rd century. And what's so interesting about it is that although it started in the 3rd century, it went through this really long progression. So after the 3rd century, it sort of goes away until around 400, when we hear St. Augustine writing about it. Augustine was somebody who really wanted to bring the Bible to people and wanted it to be alive for people. Something that he says in his most famous book, The Confessions, is take up and read. You know, he really wanted people to be engaging with text. But still, Lectio Divina was just this idea that reading was the first form of prayer, that reading the Bible was a form of prayer, until we get to the 12th century. And that is where our favorite monk.
Oh, Guijo. Is it Guigo? Guijo? I've been saying Guijo. I guess he's not here to tell us, but.
No, I wish I knew. And so Guigo II, his idea around Lectio Divina is that a piece of text should be like a grape that you put in your mouth, and that reading is putting the grape in your mouth. But then there are all of these steps, and we'll walk everybody through them. That is you biting into the grape sort of like giving you all of these juices, and then eventually this grape nourishing you. And I love that idea of a piece of text being like a grape that you're popping into your mouth.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And Guijo wrote this wonderful text, The Ladder of Monks, where he was really inspired by this passage in Genesis where there's a dream, someone has a dream and they're seeing this stairway to heaven. And so in this book, he explains that each of those 4 steps, just like the grape becoming more delicious and tasting in all these ways, each of these 4 steps of reading is also like a step up a ladder towards heaven. And he talks about readers who engage in a practice like Lectio Divina are kind of reaching the angels. And so there's this wonderful image of ascent and growing in wisdom and understanding and insight, and in many ways going very far away from the literal message of the text to a much kind of richer, more spiritual reading that sits underneath the text at all times.
Yeah, and a more personal reading, right? And we say book, it is like really short. You can buy it as a book, but you can also read this PDF, The Ladder of Monks. Just, you can find it on our website. It's super accessible and easy to read.
And because it's from many hundreds of years ago, it's in the public domain, so you're not even breaking any copyright.
True. One of the things that I love about Lectio Divina is that it again got offered as a really important resource in the conversations around Vatican II.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, in the 60s, when the Vatican was trying to figure out how to make Catholicism more modern and more accessible to the masses. So this was when the Vatican said that masses shouldn't be delivered in Latin, but should be delivered in whatever language the local people where the services take place speak. This is also when, like, nuns stopped having to wear habits all the time, and nuns were able to do wild things like drive cars. It was just a time of reformation. And Lectio Divina was one of these things that was encouraged, right? It's about putting power in the hands of the person who's praying. It's saying you don't need a priest from on high to tell you how to read this text, that this is something that you can do. You can take a piece of scripture and read it. And then even Pope Benedict XVI, you know, in the 21st century, it was one of the things that he encouraged people to do in his last years as Pope. He was saying, this is something that the masses can do in order to have a closer relationship with God. So this is something that has been talked about for almost 2,000 years. What I love about it is the ways that it's changed over time. And I think that that's, you know, the invitation that we want to offer to our listeners is we'll tell you first about the way that Guigo wrote about these 4 steps and then the way we do it. But we really want to invite everybody to be part of this, you know, nearly 2,000-year-old tradition of using Lectio Divina to have the closest, most spiritual relationship that you can have with the text. If it's not working for you, then it's not working. This is not some sacred thing that needs to be kept pristine. It is a malleable practice that you are invited to change and work with.
That's beautiful, Vanessa. So let's dig into how Guigo thinks about those four steps, because he uses slightly different words than we do, right?
Yeah, he does. So Guigo says that reading scripture, as I said, it's like putting a grape into your mouth and extracting the juice. And so the first step that he says is like the putting the grape in your mouth, which is reading, right? And so all you've done is put the grape in your mouth. You are just engaging with the text. But that leads you to biting into the grape, which he calls either thinking or meditating. And that is where you think about the significance of the text. And Guigo talks about how this will happen inevitably, right? If you bite into a grape, you can't avoid the taste of sweetness. And he is saying if you think about the text, you cannot help but pray, right? That this will automatically turn to the third step, which is one of prayer. But that inevitably, right, as soon as you've bitten into it, you like experience this like sensation of sweetness. And then you'll swallow the grape, which will nourish you. And that is when the prayer turns to what he says is a quiet stillness in the presence of God. And he calls it contemplation. That is where you are just going to sit in the quietude of God. But we obviously do this differently. Do you want to tell people about how it is that we do it on the podcast?
Yes, absolutely. So the way that we've kind of translated this tradition is to start very much with the same first step, right? A literal reading of the text. So we always ask each other, like, what's really happening? Just like we read fiction, what's just happening on the page? Can we understand the plot? But then just like we go down to a richer level. And for us, we really think about the allegorical meaning of the text. Are we reminded of images or songs or other stories or even other scenes from the same book? But this is where we really can let our imagination run wild and see all sorts of echoes throughout all sorts of other stories and cultural phenomena that we're familiar with. And what I love so much is just like for Guigo, that step from the second step to the third step happens automatically the same for us, right? When we're thinking about allegories in the text, it's so easy for us to start talking about our own experience, which is the third step, to talk about a story from our life that we're reminded of by reading this piece of text. And although the words are super different in the way that Guigo describes them, I think our interpretation of them is really faithful to the tradition because it's really an introspective exploration, right? So just like you might be meditating on the present moment or a memory or, you know, an experience that you've had, so we too kind of dig into our memories and experiences that we've had and share a story from our own life. And then for us, the final step is a reflective one that turns into action. So we say, you know, what is the text asking of us? And while Guigo might have, you know, he uses this language of contemplation where we're really receiving a gift in his language or receiving a gift from God. For us, it's about receiving a message from the text. And of course, in some ways, it's a message from ourselves and from our community because we've gone through this introspective journey and we're talking with one another. And so often we'll end up with an action that we could never have come up with on our own. We needed this reflective process with the text and with each other to find an insight or an action that will hopefully help us live, you know, a life of integrity and meaning and connection.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say that it's not just us who takes these steps and does them differently. Like Bible studies, right, in church basements all over the world take these steps and make them fit for their community, right? It's not like we were like, ha-ha, we're going to pry this from the cold, dead hands of Guigo and really mess with them. Like, this is something that everybody is invited to do.
Absolutely. And Guigo himself, of course, was adapting something that had existed before him. I mean, that's what's so wonderful about this is that you're always building on something that's come before. And I think what Guigo did so well was to kind of take these disparate strands and really beautiful ideas and put them into something very simple, these four steps. And I think we're continuing that tradition and translating it into a language, hopefully, that resonates with people today. And what's been so cool, I mean, this happened from season one, is we've had teachers applying it in the classroom and making it fit a particular curriculum. We've had parents doing it with their kids. So it's already gone beyond how we do it, which is super cool to see.
Yeah. The only other thing I would add is that the way that we did it, you know, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text started as a class. And the way that we did Lectio Divina was we would break everybody up into groups really as small as two and as big as five. And so one of us, either Casper or myself, but one facilitator, would sort of stand in the middle and would walk through the four steps. And that person, we would be half in a group, but half not in a group, because you really want to be leaning into the facilitation of it. And then depending on how much time you have, we would have each group share out. Or step one is not necessarily a step where you need people to be sharing out as much, but most people do have similar answers. Whereas step two, we would say, does anybody want to share what their group talked about? And what's incredible is how similar conversations will pop up across the room. And then for step three, there's actually something really beautiful about small group or pair work for step three, because people are much more willing to get vulnerable in smaller groups. And again, this is an opportunity to encourage people to maybe sit with people or partner with people they don't usually partner with, because you find out that you have something in common with someone who you didn't necessarily think you did. And then the place where we really would change things up was with step four. So step four, sometimes we would have people write a note to themselves. Sometimes we would say, okay, this week, what action do you feel called to do today before you go to sleep tonight? Or what we often would do is say, what action do you want us to hold you accountable to in next week's class? Or it could be something, you know, larger, like I feel called to be more vulnerable in my life. But I do think that class and accountability in the community really allows you to say, like, okay, what do you want to do in the next week? And create a sort of check-in buddy to hold you accountable to that. And so feel free to get as creative as you want. And one other thing we would do with step four is sometimes we would just have people reflect on it quietly and not share it.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite things is, in some ways, the ladder up is also a ladder down or a ladder inward, because you start, you know, in lots of conversation, like, oh, we're thinking about the plot. We all know this story. You know, it's an easy conversation to have. And then the next step, you know, we're starting to get creative, which is still high energy, but it's no longer just repeating back the text. We're kind of sharing our interpretation, our ideas. And then next, we talk about our experience in that smaller container of the small group or a pair, like you were saying, Vanessa. And I love how you would always say, you know, in that final step, like, think of something really actionable. Try and find something that's truly something that you can either do or not do in this next week. And I love that kind of writing a letter to yourself or just thinking quietly. You know, sometimes those things aren't something that you want to share with people, right? Like on the action side, you can keep that to yourself. So we've seen that done really effectively. One other build that I might offer is if you have folks who are sharing step three in a small group, you can just have two or three people across the room share what they shared. So not just sharing their own words, not what they've heard from other people. But it's a nice way for the whole room to feel like they're connected to a kind of more vulnerable moment. But you'll find the right way to do it, I know, for your context. So Vanessa, how do you know if it's worked?
First of all, I want to say it's worked if you've gone through the four steps, right? Even if you don't have this like amazing breakthrough, there's something wonderful about just doing a practice, right? Not every run is going to be your personal best. You know, not every cake is going to be incredible. It's fine. You just do it. But my favorite Lectio Divina is, and I'll be curious to hear what is true for you, is when you see the text in a whole new way.
Yeah.
When it's like, oh my God, this is the same as when Hermione does X, Y, and Z. And you have like some huge aha moment, which I don't know. I think I'm just such a nerd that it's not when necessarily something resonates about my own life, but when like it feels like the world has cracked open a little bit and anything seems possible.
Yeah. The big thing that I realized is that on the one hand, you might think, oh, returning to the same text time after time, you know, how is that going to be interesting? But the text is really a mirror. And this practice helps us see ourselves through the text. And it means that because our lives are always changing, the text is always changing. And that you get to reinterpret the text through your own life means that the text is always interesting. And again, this is why we love doing it together, because even if my reading doesn't really go hugely fascinatingly, I'm talking to you, and for you it did, and that helps me unlock something. So it's just another reason why doing this in community just makes it so much richer. So if you're starting out, I would definitely recommend that this is the first one that you try.
And it absolutely works if you bring a specific quote in mind, or if you just like put your finger anywhere in this week's reading, Lectio will find a way to speak to you.
Random, random, random is the best.
Sometimes there's a quote that you are like, there's something here and I need to figure it out.
Yeah. You're more disciplined than I am. I'm just like, ooh.
Well, we hope that you enjoy doing Lectio Divina. Be in touch with us. If you think of any better or different ways of doing it, we would love to hear from you. Email us at harrypottersacredtext.com.
Thanks, everyone. Enjoy.